Hello, everyone, and welcome into Debate Night. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Silas in studio. Brody, I'm joined virtually yet again. Sorry we're a little bit late, but it is what it is. We're here. So Brody, you're in Nashville, right now?
We are in Nash, Vegas. Well, it might be just outside. Man, this light might be a little too bright, huh? Let's put it down a little bit. And I'll put it up. I've got some nice window side lighting over here. But yeah, we're in Nashville right now. And I'm getting ready. Silas, question for you. Is there ever a time that I'm going to be able to see Hunter?
What do you mean?
Hunter, can you see me?
I can see you now. Yeah, we got that figured out. We're into the future.
Is there ever a time where I can
see? Can you just flip the laptop around?
What?
Me flip the laptop?
No, not you. Not you. I'm talking to Silas.
No.
Okay, never mind. It was a bad idea, apparently.
I guess we could. But
I'm saying in the future, I feel like I need to be able to see Hunter because just sometimes I can read off his facial expressions what he's really saying. I feel like
I have the solution. We'll just get a webcam on the monitor that I monitor Brody on and then run it to your laptop.
Yeah.
And then he'll be able to see me the same solution. Way I see him. Yeah. Boom. We'll have it next week. Good. Next week you'll see me.
All right. Sweet.
I'll keep my sarcasm to a minimum this week.
Well, I mean, because there are some things that I need to discuss with you a little bit, and I would like to do that face to face if we can, but it is what it is.
You can hide behind
a microphone.
I'll hide behind the camera right now.
But what do you want to talk about first?
Well, first I just want to hear Texas State's kind of wrap up the experience. What all went down there, and your take on the tournament as a whole.
Well, can we first say like there was an over-exaggeration about the course? Because I feel like I saw a lot of positive things from fans, at least. Maybe I was only seeing it and I was ignoring the negative, like inadvertently, but I felt like most people really did like the course.
Yes.
And I think that's huge. I think the spectators on the grounds really liked the course as well. Now, I unfortunately was never in a position where we had a lot of spectators. I think maybe me and Stokely's round probably had the most, I want to say. When we matched up in round two, I want to say we probably had a good 40 or 50 people following around for the first 9 holes or so. But it seemed like when I was leaving on Friday, they were up on hole, what was that, 15? Yeah, they were on hole 15. It seemed like there was a decent amount of people out there watching. And it was a good course for them to be able to, you know, spectators be able to walk around and watch. But I think the event went well. I think the tournament was exciting. I think FPO and MPO, you know, both of them kind of coming down towards the last couple holes. I also, you know, when we did our preview of the actual course, I talked about how those last 3 holes or so, they're good finishing holes because 17 is a very, very difficult birdie. It is birdieable, but very difficult. It also brings into play a bogey. And then 18, that tee shot's very, very tough. And, you know, the second shot with people just launching shots over the out of bounds baseball field, you know, anything could really happen there. So I think it's exciting. You know, the one thing that, you know, you might say could have been better was just the aesthetics of everything. Mm. It's not the greatest look to be playing alongside a baseball field, but it is what it is. We have to do with what we have. And overall, though, I think it was great from my standpoint of how the tournament went for me. It wasn't obviously what I wanted, but I can't be too upset with some of the statistics that I did, because I feel like I did actually throw the disc extremely well for most of the tournament. I did have a couple holes where I had a couple loose shots here and there, but for, you know, overall, I felt like I was throwing the disc really, really well. I just wasn't scoring. And so it was kind of frustrating because my putter again kind of let me down. I want to say this tournament, that was probably my biggest weakness was my putting. I was 69th in gain putting, and again, that's with a grain of salt because I don't know how accurate these stats really are, but they can't be that far off. But I was 26th in fairway hits. I was 12th in parked. I parked 15% of the holes, and I was 29th in circle one regulation and 20th in circle two in regulation. So I was still in the disc pretty decently. It was just one of those where I wasn't putting well at all. Like starting round three, that, you know, big pyramid hole, I had a putt for 25 feet maybe for birdie. I was on like pretty much as close as you can get to the first step without being on the first step.
Mm-hmm.
And big right to left wind, which unfortunately is probably the worst wind for that hole as far as putting goes. And I just didn't aim far enough right. So I hit like top left chains, and then it rolled all the way down to about 30 feet. And now I have that 30 footer straight into a headwind, and that one just clanked off the cage. So then I started my round with 3-putt bogey.
Mm.
So that kind of sums up my tournament of where I felt like I was throwing the disc really well. There was a couple mistakes that I had that I wish I could have taken back, because this is one of those tournaments. I don't know if you guys looked at it too intently, because I mean, obviously most people are just looking at the top, you know, top five, top 10. But if you look kind of towards where I ended up finishing, you know, two or three shots better, you launch up the leaderboard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where, you know, it was frustrating because I took a bogey on a birdieable par four by just throwing the wrong shot off the tee. I was trying to be a little bit too aggressive on a hole that you don't need to be. So I'm still making a lot of mental mistakes, which I guess is frustrating to me, but overall I can't be too upset about it. I do want to say something that I sent Kelsey a TikTok that I saw, and her response to TikTok that I sent was actually really good. I want to say it. And I think this is something that I'm definitely going to be aware of and working on. And it's a very easy statement. It's winning is not the goal, it's the result. I think that statement, if I can get that through and just focus on that, I think I'll do a lot better in these tournaments, because right now I like to say that my mental game is really strong. I have a really good mental game is what I would like to think, but this season so far has been really bad mentally.
Mm.
And I think that statement right there, I'm focusing so much on winning and so much on, like, you know, I bogey the first hole. It's like, oh my gosh, now I'm so far back.
Yeah.
And now it's like I'm focusing way too much on winning, when in fact that is just the result of the process. Like, I need to focus on the process. I need to focus on all the things, and then the result will come, which is winning. So I'm going to try to do that this tournament, see how it goes, and just really, I mean, it's obviously easier said than done.
Yeah.
But really just focus on each shot, right? And trying to execute and do what I need to do to do each shot, and not so much, you know, a perfect example is the second round. I actually had a decent back nine. I threw that the upshot over the baseball field. I threw it OB left, but I was pin high. So I had a 34 footer just outside the circle, staring right at that elevated basket. And my thought should be, all right, execute this putt. Just go through my routine and execute this step putt.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, I was thinking about, all right, if I make this putt, I'm gonna have a par, and I'm gonna shoot this much for my round.
Yeah.
And then, all right, I gotta make sure not to miss this putt, because there's OB. Like, I was thinking about all that, and what I end up doing. I ended up like throwing the most uncommittal putt of the round. Like, it was, if you were watching, because there was actually a decent amount of spectators just, like, you know, posted up on 18, they probably looked at that and was like, oh my gosh, like, that, it looked terrible. No, like, major wobble, didn't even get cage height. Like, it didn't even get above cage height. and just launched left, missed the basket, missed everything, went OB, ended up throwing the next one in for a double. So I think that's where mentally I need a change and just focus on the process, and we'll see what the result is. So that's what I'm going to go for this week, and see how we do.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. I mean, really, really quick to go all the way back to like one of your first statements, just because I think what was happening leading up to the tournament in regards to the course was basically players were getting upset because they went from a wooded course to a more quote unquote open course. And then the fans were reacting without actually seeing the course. And so what I was hearing from fans were like, oh, great, it's going to be another Heiser Fest and stuff like that, which was like, that's not the course at all. So I think once the fans actually saw the course, then it was like, oh, this is an entertaining tournament. Because the course made you still be technical and made you still throw a lot of really good shots if you wanted to score, and punished you if you didn't throw good shots. That's why you saw so many players falling down the leaderboard if they weren't able to throw good shots. And so I think that all in all, everyone, I didn't really see anything negative about the course once the tournament started. It was just kind of before the tournament, but a lot of people were just saying stuff that wasn't true about the course because they didn't know yet. So,
and like I said, that middle section of where I ended up finishing, there were so many people clumped into that middle section, which made it to where if you do have a hot round, like I played with John Willis, who shot 10 under the final round.
Yeah.
He moved so far up where on other courses where it's kind of like a birdie or die situation, like you you don't have to play that bad on that course to shoot 3 under.
Yeah.
Right. Like the difference between like shooting 3 under and 7 under on that course is not very drastic. It could be like 1 or 2 decisions.
Yeah.
Because of just how punishing some of those holes are for making mistakes. And also that course, like you actually, a lot of those holes, you have to execute such a good shot to be able to put yourself in a position to birdie. And that's why you saw guys not, and even on the FPO side too, they played obviously a different course, so it's harder for me to, you know, a lot of their tee pads were different.
Yeah.
So it's harder for me to talk too much on that. But I know on the MPO side, that's why you saw, obviously you still have the Calvins and the Rickies, and well, Ricky actually didn't even have that great of a first round, but
yeah, he's able to come back though.
Yeah, Calvin, you know, consistently, there are some people that consistently shot really high, but they're in the minority. Like there was a lot of people that had like 2 good rounds and 1 bad round.
Yeah.
Right. So I liked it because it forced you to actually play well, to shoot well.
Yeah.
Where sometimes I feel like you can walk off a course and be like, I didn't really play that well. Like Vegas, prime example, first round at Vegas, I didn't think I played that well, because there was like 3 or 4 holes that were like very easy and I didn't get those easy holes, but I did get a lot of holes that were difficult.
Yeah.
So even though my like 9 under was like, I think in third or whatever, in my head, I didn't feel like I played that well because I left so many easy holes out there. This course, there wasn't a hole. There might've been 1 or 2 like par 4s where I was like, all right, as long as I don't mess up my drive, I should be good. But for the majority, par 3 very difficult, and par 4s you had to execute 2 shots, not just 1. So it really made you feel like when you walked off and you shot 6, 7, 8, 9 under, you were like, man, I played really well today. And I like those type of courses where you can feel like, man, I actually earned that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how a tournament championship level course should pretty much always be. Speaking of courses,
I'm sure that's how you felt too, walking off that course, you know, shooting 30 over. You were probably like,
I mean,
yeah, I earned
18 over, but I did earn it, and I wore it. I wore it with pride. Actually, I'm getting destroyed simply because I said Trevor got all the luck that day, which I asked Trevor today. I said, who got the luck between us two that round? He said, I did. And I said, that's all I said. And then, but oh well, doesn't matter.
The thing with that course is luck only happens on like really bad shots. And if you're throwing really bad shots, that's why I like that course, because like if you're throwing really bad shots, who cares? You're not even in cash anyways.
Yeah.
Right. But cause I think, would Trevor shoot?
He ended up shooting like 7 over, I think, when it was all said and done. He was on track to shoot better than that, but kind of messed up at the end. That's why the few weeks ago in my head, I thought he was better score-wise.
Yeah, so after and also, to be fair, you guys, that back nine, you guys played an easier back nine.
Yes, like 3 or 4 of the holes, we played completely different holes that aren't even on the course.
But needless to say, it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Now, speaking of courses, though, you're at Music City Open this week. Your first time seeing the course. I've never seen this course. How is it lining up? What's it playing like?
I don't want to go into that just yet.
Okay.
I want to hold that off. Okay. I want to talk mainly to Silas right now. I got to talk to Silas. Because
Silas is unmuting himself.
I need to know where Silas's head is at, because you guys just got done playing a tournament, and this was Silas's first ever like legitimate tournament.
Yes.
Yeah. And I need, and if you haven't yet, guys, make sure you go to our Patreon.
It's releasing tonight.
Patreon.com/foundation disc golf. The link is also in the description. If you're listening to this, it will be up. I think the lowest tier is $5 and it'll give you access to the video. There's a bunch of perks and all that stuff. Take a look at it. But the biggest perk is you guys get to watch Silas, Hunter, and Trevor play in the C tier. And
the windiest tournament I've ever played.
We can't really spoil anything. So feel free to say whatever you want, because even though I know the results, I'm very interested in watching.
This is all about watching what went down, not necessarily because none of us won the tournament or anything.
No.
It's just about watching how we got to where we were at. And also, we experienced.
Trevor was close.
Trevor did get close. Yeah. The nerves got to him a little bit on the back. We experienced all 4 seasons in one round. It went from being like you could play in shorts and a t-shirt to literally snowing 5 holes in. Not no joke. It was actually snowing 5 holes in, to then being just super windy but kind of cold. And then by the end, it was back to being warm. I don't know what happened. It was the craziest weather round of all time. But Silas, walk us through your first tournament. What was it like?
Well, it was a great experience. It was very fun. It was very fun just overall. Overall fun. But also kind of miserable. It was kind of miserable. I don't have disc golf shoes, so my feet were soaked by the end of it. And you know, it was a good time though.
He also this was apparently his first time playing in a lot of wind. Is that fair to say, Silas?
Yeah, no.
So when we were stepping up to some of the shots, we didn't realize what he was about to throw, and like it was a ripping headwind, and his disc would just flip like crazy. We'd be like, Silas, what was that? He was like, it was my Janus Thrasher. That thing's stable for me. I was like, not in a 30-mile-an-hour headwind. It's not. And so there was a lot of learning experiences out there, and he also got some very just unlucky breaks. You'll see in the video if you watch it. I mean, there were some like 5-foot putts that somehow just popped straight back out at him for no reason. it was ruthless.
It was ridiculous.
He couldn't catch a good break out there. But it was a good time.
I feel like you guys have to play in another tournament, because we need to get like, you can't really get a baseline off of that tournament. Those conditions.
That round was crazy.
It's like, yeah, who knows what could happen. And, you know, I think, honestly, Silas, it probably, like, made it a little less nervous, like, nervy and stressful, because you were like, these conditions are ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Like yeah. I'm just gonna throw out the idea.
I have no idea what you just said.
Yeah.
Your internet went completely out there.
Oh, did I go out?
Yeah.
You're back.
That weather probably made it to where you weren't stressed about like, oh, I hope I play well today, or like get nervous over stuff because you're just like, this weather's absolutely crazy, so it doesn't really matter what I do.
Yeah.
So that's why I want to see like another like baseline. You guys all go out and play in good conditions and see what happens, because I think I'm just curious to see how you feel when it comes to like you have a 20-foot par putt And just like, does that feel anything different than in practice to you?
Okay.
Or do you actually start getting those nerves a little bit like a lot of us do?
Hey, I made a couple of them out there.
He did. He hit a few good putts.
Yeah, I made a couple.
But it was, I think that was where Trevor and I had a little bit of an advantage, is it was so windy that you didn't have to putt because everyone was laying up everything inside like 40 feet. If you were... Realistically, if you weren't inside like 10 feet, there was no reason to try to putt the disc because it was just a 30-mile-an-hour headwind pretty much on every hole. And so Trevor and I just got to just lay up. We just played a bunch of layup golf, and that's exactly what we needed. So that's kind of why we were able to stay in there. But no, we'll definitely – flex starts, I think, are our thing. We got to find some more flex starts because it makes it where we could all play on the same card, which helped keep it like it didn't feel like you were playing a tournament, which is what made it a lot more fun for Trevor and I, especially Silas. Obviously, it was his only experience, but I think that Trevor and I get too much in our own heads when we're playing like an actual tournament, because then it starts to feel real when like everyone else on your card's taking it serious. But when you throw a really stupid shot and everyone on your card is friends with you, so they all bust up laughing, it's a lot harder to get in your own head about how bad of a shot you just threw because everyone's just having a good time.
Yeah.
So I think flex starts are our thing. I think that's how we come out of retirement slowly.
Yeah, just slowly do it, and who knows? From there, it can go to something else, you know?
Yeah, next thing you know, we'll be on the Pro Tour, you know? It's just one step in front, one foot in front of the other.
I would try to do it faster and later because it's getting harder and harder.
Oh, no. There's no chance. I've given up on any professional disc golf.
You could do Silver Series.
Oh, yeah. Silver Series you could play. That'd be fun.
People still get in. I think there's like a decent amount of people that aren't touring in this Silver Series. So yeah, we can transition over to MCO now. Music City Open.
Yeah, well, walk me through the course. What are you thinking of the course?
So if you watch coverage from last year, because last year it was a national tour, and if you remember, this was the tournament that Ricky and Mason Ford into that playoff, and then Ricky had that like odd putt that was like a layup that everyone was like, what was going on? And then the you know, conspiracy theory of like he let Mason Ford win, which was fun to have. So the course, a lot of holes are the same, and a lot of holes are either a little different or completely brand new. I played the practice round today with Ezra, and he thinks some holes got harder, some holes got a little easier. I'll give you my takeaway on like the positives and negatives.
Okay.
Positives, it's on property where it's just disc golf.
Nice. It's always good.
Rolling hills, some gap shots, some tight kind of tunnel shots, some open holes, some really good greens. So it has a lot of cool aspects of where holes aren't like this. And there's a lot of holes where they require very specific shot shaping. So you're going to see players throw a lot of different shots. And then you're going to see some holes too where you can attack it multiple different ways. So instead of, you know, every hole, no matter who's on the card, you're just seeing backhand hyzer, backhand hyzer, backhand hyzer.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to see now people go at it at a backhand, a forehand. You're going to see people go at it all different kinds of ways. So that's going to be kind of cool. Some things I don't necessarily like about it. I'm not a huge fan. I've talked about this before. Not a huge fan of the first hole being like a little short hole, or especially a par three. I'd rather... just for time purposes too, and I think for fans as well, just spectating, I'd rather it be like just throw a par four, throw your drive, everyone gets off the fairway, and then they can kind of get the round started versus having a hole where it's like you can hit a tree 10 feet off the tee pad.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a knock, but that's just kind of like, I don't know. I don't know if people of other pros feel that way.
Or that's just a personal preference thing.
If this is a personal preference, just because of my golf background of where it's like normally the first hole is a par four and it kind of just gets you into the round. But that's my thought on that. I will say there probably is too many Well, here's a good question. What do you think is a hole that's too short for the Pro Tour?
For the Pro Tour?
Or does that not exist? It depends.
I think it depends a lot on the course. Because like sometimes a course can be like really hard, and then if you throw in a really easy like 270-foot par 3 or something where like everyone feels like it's a must get, it can almost make the hole feel a lot harder because there's the pressure of like this is one of the only must get birdies on the course. So I think it depends a lot on the course, but realistically, I mean, I think if it's less than like 275, I don't really see there being much of a place for it on the tour. Most normal courses, I would think like 300 feet would be like a short enough par 3.
Okay. I think they have four holes that are pretty short.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, two of them feel like they didn't really know what to do to connect one hole to the next. They kind of just put these two holes in between. So that way it's like the flow, I guess. One of them I actually kind of like. It'll be interesting to see what you guys think, because it's a little bit of a tunnel shot. It's not that much of a, like, it's more of a gap shot rather, just kind of right off the tee. It prohibits you from throwing any sort of spike hyzer. So you have to kind of throw a straightest shot at it. And the green, this is kind of what we talked about, of where they made the OB in it's not like your typical OB green of where it's like a circle.
And
it's like a kidney bean, where like one side of the kidney bean is bigger than the other.
Yeah.
And so the basket is on this little side of the kidney bean, and then this is like the bigger side. And it's a par 3, super short, but it forces you to throw a very like speed control technical shot into this green, and it allows you to see like how aggressive you want to be. So I don't mind that one, but I do think there probably is one too many. And especially for me, I personally don't think holes, like, I would probably put it right around like 275. I think 300 is a good number as well, but I think 275 I'm okay with.
Yeah.
But I think you got to make it to where I'm not a huge fan of holes that are short, where it's very, very difficult to get a bogey. Like you have to do like something astronomically terrible to get a bogey. So there's a couple holes on there where I just feel like the scoring separation is not going to be much, right? It's just going to be, people are going to get twos or threes. But there are some incredible holes. Again, I'm also, you know, we've talked about finishing with a par 4 because I like the idea that someone has to execute two shots under pressure to win, versus like all they have to do is just execute one shot, they're on the green, and then they can just lay up and tap in or whatever. I like the idea that they have to execute two shots. But that being said, hole 16, extremely technical, very specific force flex, like force over flex forehand, like 375.
Uh-huh.
Very difficult. Probably 8 shots on it today. I got, you know, 4 each about. I got 1 in the circle, 1 or 2 in circle 2, and then the other one was absolute trash. Basically throwing on the tee. Ezra got like 1 just outside of circle. So it's a very difficult shot. Hole 17, I think you're going to love it. I think it's one of the best holes on the course. Very difficult par 4. And then hole 13 or hole 18, you got a huge hyzer, kind of spike hyzer into this green, but it's like a pushing spike hyzer. And you've got to manage either in front of this tree or over top of the tree. And if you hit the tree, you're going to drop down to OB. It's a pretty high stressful shot to finish on. So I think the finishing holes are going to create some drama if the scores are close. But, you know, I think it's a good silver series. And I think it's similar to Belton, where you have a course that's fairly new, because I believe the course was put in last year. So you have a fairly new course, and the Disc Golf Pro Tour, I think how they're approaching it is hey, let's keep running it, and we'll run it as a silver series. And it allows them, you know, it's the biggest scale, and they kind of allows them to change and manipulate and say like, hey, these holes weren't very good. Let's change that up for next year. And eventually maybe it becomes an elite series event.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. And I think too, that's good. That's good for the Disc Golf Pro Tour, because I think for them, if they have like, let's say 25 events, I'm just throwing out numbers. But let's say they have 25 events that could be on the Elite Series as far as all the standard things. Good internet capabilities, great for spectators, an awesome fair course, good parking, all these types of things. Then the only thing that they should really be looking at of being like, all right, we need to pick 15 of these, let's say. How are we going to decide which 15 are going to be Elite Series and which of the other ones are going to have to be silver if they all meet, check all those boxes?
Yeah.
And I think the thing that will decide it would be the money, which one bring in the most money.
Mm-hmm.
So then you end up having these kind of battles with all these tournaments to try to, you know, make their tournament on the Elite Series event or on the Elite Series tour. Right. And, I think that's good. I think that's good for the tour, and it's good for the players that you could potentially end up having where we have an abundance amount of tournaments that could be on the Elite Series. And so the deciding factor is, well, the purse at this one's going to be 75,000 and the purse at this one's 25. So the 25 will be a silver and the 75 will be Elite Series.
Yeah, Trevor actually just recently interviewed, I think it was last week, he interviewed UC Maresma from Discmania. One of the things UC had brought up in an article he wrote a long time back that Trevor brought back up was that as disc golf tournaments continue to develop, a lot of the, like, there might be a period where purses seem to stall, if that makes sense, where they're not growing, even though the sport's growing. And what he was saying that a lot of tournaments will be doing in that time is more money will be coming in, but they'll be investing into infrastructure, fan experience, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So that the tournaments become more sustainable, there's more money coming in and all of that, and then a few years, the purses will really explode because then the tournaments are set up to handle that versus, you know, I think that's kind of where we're in to a certain degree, where there's clearly more money coming into these tournaments, but there's clearly not that much more money going out to players right now. So I think a lot of fans are kind of going, where is this going? But like you were saying, at Vegas, there was more crowd control efforts being put in, and at different tournaments, mm-hmm. I think you'll start to notice more efforts being put into the fan experience and things like that that'll draw fans in and make it worth them paying for tickets and stuff like that. So then that's a whole new revenue source for these tournaments that they're currently building out. And then over the next few years, that'll continue to grow and they won't need to have to invest in the tournament much anymore. And that's when we'll really start to see some of these bigger and bigger purses. And that might be kind of what starts to separate silver from Elite Series as well, is which tournaments have the best infrastructure to, like, not only be able to offer the biggest cash purse, but also be able to draw the most people in, where it's such a good fan experience that people want to travel to Maple Hill or people want to travel to Ledgestone just to watch, not to play, just to watch the Pro Tour event and everything that's going on surrounding it in that week. I think that was a pretty good take I got from listening to Trevor's show earlier today.
I actually haven't really thought about that too much, because I do think a lot of people are just like, hey, the Disc Golf Pro Tour should just be putting all this money into purses and paying the players. And yes, I agree. But what he just said actually makes a lot more sense of where, hey, let's play the long game a little bit, right? Of where let's slowly increase the purses when we can and reinvest this money. So that way our live stream is better. We have a better commentary team. We have all these things that make watching disc golf, you know, how it looks on camera, like the signs, the spectators, you know, let's get bleachers in here, whatever it may be,
yeah,
how it looks, to where more people are going to tune in, more people are going to watch. Then all of a sudden that is going to bring in sponsors, and that really is the money that is going to skyrocket purses, is when you start having, you know, sponsors throwing cash on the table. So that's actually a really, really good point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I've got a few other topics that we can go into, but it sounded like at the beginning of the call that you might have had some that you wanted to go into. So My topics aren't time sensitive.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously I wanted to hear about your guys' tournament a little bit. You had a terrible take with Trevor talking about the amount of courses in Lynchburg and how
that take got twisted. Dallas, that take got twisted.
You said like
it was still incorrect. My take was still incorrect. 5 minutes
to get to any course in Dallas, and it's like, what are you talking about?
So where that take came from? Let me explain it for a second. I'll 100% it was incorrect. But where it was coming from,
a lot of people got mad on Twitter.
Oh, I saw it. I refused to respond to all of them because I'm like, this is going to take me an eternity to try to explain myself in Twitter comments, and I've learned my lesson.
Explain it now. Yeah.
Where the comment came from is when we were in Dallas. Basically, we were looking up places to go, and every time it wasn't just courses. Like, we were at a course, and Trevor and Connor went to try In-N-Out, 45 minutes to In-N-Out. Then we get to In-N-Out, and we're going to an escape room after, 30 minutes to the escape room. Then we leave the escape room, 40 minutes back to the hotel. And those are all on toll roads, too.
You guys planned that terribly.
Oh, no. We were leaving the course, and we picked the In-N-Out that was on the way to the only escape room that had an opening that night. But then we were going from one course to the other course, and then we went to Autobahn, and then we went to the disc golf store in between. And everywhere we were driving, every time we plugged in the GPS, it was always like 35 minutes or more. And so we were just like joking around, like, dang, everything to do here, like in Lynchburg, everything's like 10 to 15 minutes because we're such a small city. Everything in Dallas, everything's just bigger, so it's 30 minutes. That's the 15 minutes. And then we're on toll roads.
But hold on. Time out. When you say everything to do in Lynchburg, okay, yes. If you want to do stuff that's in Lynchburg,
yeah.
But how long does it take you to get to Topgolf in Lynchburg?
Well, that's what I was saying. Everything to do in Lynchburg is 15 minutes apart.
How long does it take you to get to Topgolf in Lynchburg?
The phrase I said is everything to do in Lynchburg.
Well, yeah, there's not that much stuff to do in Lynchburg.
I never claimed there was. I just said everything you're doing is 15 minutes away.
There was a lot of disc golf courses. You said there was
no. So that take was. I said within.
Exact quote.
It was within 45 minute drive. I said because then you bring in. I was saying then you bring in so many courses in surrounding areas that it felt like if I'm driving to a course next door in Dallas, it's 40 minutes away. I could drive to Roanoke in 40 minutes, and once you bring that in, then there's like 20 some courses.
The photos I posted on Twitter did not look good for you.
They did. Well, no. Well, first off, I would never ever admit. It probably came across as I was saying it, but I'm not an idiot. I'm aware that it's simple fact that Dallas has more courses than Lynchburg. But I would be curious.
Did you see Minnesota?
Yes, Minnesota. I mean,
or Minneapolis.
Yeah, their courses everywhere. It was like you were looking at an anthill. There's so many courses.
That was ridiculous.
And you want to talk about somewhere? Yeah. Well, I can't say you don't play in the winter because I know they're crazy up there and they do. But I mean, you're playing in like 5 feet of snow up there. And they got that many courses.
That's wild.
Yeah. I mean,
that's wild.
That's a dream, you know? Maybe one day Lynchburg will be like that. But yeah, no, the take was a slightly taken out of context, but it was still wrong no matter how it got taken. And you know what? I deserved the Twitter heat I got. I'll eat it. I'll take it.
I mean, that is the thing is like when we say something ridiculous, we're on here, you know, 2 hours every week.
Yeah.
You do grip locked as well. Like, we're going to say ridiculous things, and we all should, you know, take it when it happens. And I think we do that. I think we take it on the chin. We take it like Chris Rock, straight across the cheek.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you just need to be slapped by Will Smith. It happens.
Let's talk about world rankings real quick. So Ricky regained number one.
Yes.
Did Paige go back to number one?
Yes, and that was actually the point I was about to bring up. Have you not looked at FPO?
Pull it up really quick
and just look at how much Paige went up with her win. Look at her dominance index.
We're talking about UDisc, right?
Yes. Look at her UDisc world ranking dominance index, how much it went up with the win. And this is why I get so confused. Even though it's been explained to me by UDisc, this is what confused me. Is it ridiculous? I just want to get your reaction when you see it, so I'm not going to say it.
Okay.
I'll say it after.
Because was she like fourth in the world before
she was third.
Texas State?
She was third in
she
the
was
world.
Third. Okay,
right. All she did was win. She beat the two people in front of her.
Okay. So Ricky, just so we can kind of be clear, Ricky literally just went up one spot. Paul was number one. Ricky just went up one spot, and Ricky went up 9.88 points.
Yes.
Okay. Just so we can kind of keep an idea.
I don't think that necessarily helped a ton, but
Paige went up 23 points.
So this is what's confusing to me, right? Kat and Kristen tied for second. So they beat everyone in the field except for Paige. So they, and all Paige beat that they didn't beat was them two. And they went up 3 points and 5 points, and she went up 23.
So if you take like the difference, she went up 20 more points than Katrina and went up like 17 more points or 18 more points than Kristen.
Yeah. And they,
what?
And
yeah, I don't get that.
And Kristen and Kat tied and they went up different amount of points. I guess it's based on their dominance rating come into the tournament was different. But yeah, I mean, that's where I was looking at, and I was like, this confused me way more than I ever expected it to after this week.
Wait, how is that? Yeah, how is that? We might be sounding like absolute morons right now, but how can you tie and your dominance ratings be different?
I think it's based on their dominance ratings coming into the weekend.
We're because different. They put themselves in an algorithm, so then it's
okay. Yeah. I mean,
all right.
Fascinating though.
I will say this though. This is one of those things of where it's like, I wish I could be that person and be like, oh no, this is stupid. But I've said it makes sense. It makes complete sense of where, as far as world rankings go, you should be rewarded for winning, getting top fives, top tens, top 20s, let's say, right? Those are all things that you should be rewarded way more than like getting a top 50.
Yeah.
Right. But when you're sitting into the freaking mud and you're in the muck of all those players, I just have to have a good tournament because
you need something.
I can't move up.
I think it,
I can't move up.
Looking at Yuli ahead of you, it might have been better for you just to have DNF'd.
It makes sense though. Like, yes, I should not get rewarded for getting what 37th or whatever I got.
Yeah.
You can't really move up in the rankings if you just keep getting like 30th and set 40th.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the question. Like, what would your world ranking be if you consistently got like fourth every single turn? Your world ranking would not be the 40th though.
Well, it depends on who you're beating.
If like, but like your ranking, if you got 40th at every tournament, like you would just be, it makes sense to be like, oh, that's the 40th best player in the world, but you're not. Because if people that are finishing like, let's say 41st, 42nd, 43rd at other tournaments, but they have one tournament, they get third, they're going to skyrocket you.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where it's the same thing in the Disc Golf Pro Tour points, right? Like the standings of the Disc Golf Pro Tour. If you just consistently are getting 30th, 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 you will not get into the playoffs.
Yeah. You're
not
You got to have some tournament where you pop off.
Yeah. And this is
people around you will.
And this is what I talked about a while ago is like, if you could pick yourself to be a player, would you pick player A that is consistently getting top 30, right? Like 28, 29, 30, 22, 25, 27. Or would you pick player B that like doesn't cash top 10, doesn't cash top five, doesn't cash 12th? Like I'm picking player B every time.
Yeah, I'd agree. Because, yeah, I mean, realistically, I'm trying to think of which player is kind of like that. But if you're able to, like, if you're player B, where you're sneaking into top five, top 10 here
Greg,
and there.
Greg Barsby.
Just did it. That's a name where people are going to be talking about you when you pop into that top 10, top five. If you're in 25th place every weekend, no one's saying anything. Someone might here and there be like, oh, dude, so-and-so is Mr. Consistent. He finished 25th on average at every tournament. And it's like, oh, that was cool. But if someone pops in and finishes in top four, and you're like, who is this guy? He just popped on the scene. And then every time he comes back up, kind of like Joel Freeman's kind of done that here and there. Ben Callaway kind of did at the end of last year. And there,
Joel Freeman's getting way more consistent, though, the top.
Yeah.
His game. Yeah, his game right now is ridiculous.
I picked him to be in the top three at Texas States. I was this close to it being good.
It's not a bad pick.
Yeah.
His game right now looks really good.
Now, here's a... interesting topic that was proposed to us on the Discord in the debate night, you know, Discord chat. It was from a user named Trigan. He said, potential debate night topic for this week. Player commitments to events need to be made more strict now that fans are having to pay for tickets to spectate. A number of players have pulled out of the Tallahassee Open in the past week, including Paul McBeth, Anthony Barella, and others. Paul particularly pulled out after ticket sales began. Outside of extenuating circumstances such as injury, family, etc., should the Pro Tour penalize players for pulling out previously made commitments? Monetary penalties are likely to be unfair in many situations, but perhaps a Pro Tour points penalty for missing a previously committed to event. This has been a long running issue on the PGA Tour as well, and as far as I know, the PGA has done nothing to solve this either. So essentially he's saying people are buying tickets to watch a player and the player drops out. Is that an issue?
Ooh, that's a good one, because I'm kind of actually on the fence right now whether or not I'm going to go to the Tallahassee Open. And obviously from the player side, it's tough, because I have seen lots of stuff on social media talking about, you know, excited to see me play in Tallahassee.
Yeah.
I think the tricky part with everything is there are so many players like myself that are very dependent on how they play will depend on what they do in the season. And there are other players that Eagle is a perfect example of, he doesn't have to worry about points. Like, he's not worrying about, is he going to be able to qualify for the tour championship? He knows that right now in the landscape of where disc golf is, he knows that if he plays eight events, if he just plays eight Elite Series events, he's going to get enough points in those eight events to get him in the tour championship. So he can set his schedule in stone for the most part and be good with it. There are others like myself where, you know, with how the Disc Golf Pro Tour works, where they drop different, you know, your lowest tournament scores, right? So I think Elite or Silver Series, I think they only count three. And I think there's either five or six events. So if you play all six, they're only going to count your best three finishes. So if you play the first three Silver Series and you play really, really well, you just get like top five, top five, top five, it probably doesn't make any sense for you to play the other three if all you care about is points. Now, obviously, if you care about trying to win a tournament, then sure, you can play in that. But if all you really care about is points, it probably makes more sense for you to take that week off, you know, recover, work on other parts of your game, than continue to keep the grind going of being out on tour. That's where I'm like right now too, with how tournaments are set up too. It's a little crazy, because I didn't realize how far away Tallahassee is from Champions Cup.
Yeah.
It's like a 6 or 7 hour drive. And then the other thing is Champions Cup starts on Wednesday.
Yep.
So if you end up going to the Tallahassee Open, which is Sunday, let's say you actually play well. So your tee time's not until 2 o'clock on Sunday. You're done at 5. You're probably in your car driving at 6. You could theoretically drive throughout the night, get into Georgia, early Monday morning, sleep, wake up, and now you have Monday and Tuesday. Monday you're going to be, you just came off a tournament, and you just came off of a 7 hour drive. So whatever that means for your Monday practice. And then you have Tuesday to practice, and then boom, you're right into a major.
Yeah. It's not great scheduling.
That's tough. So that's where, to me, like initially I was like, I need to front load my tournament schedule, right? So that way I can play in these tournaments, and later in the year I can see like, okay, do I need, you know, right now my lowest Silver Series points is like 12. Like if I go and get a top 10 at this Silver Series, I can get an extra 10 points. It'll, you know, I can start doing that math later of whether or not I need to go to certain events. So I really want to front Do I want to play my first major this year with 2 days of practice, one of which will probably not be that great of practice, on a course that, from talking to people, is not a course you just show up and play. It's a course that you definitely want rounds and rounds and rounds. Sure. So it's tough. It's tough because I'm probably tomorrow on whether I'm out. And I think it's difficult because it is going to suck. It's like going to, you know, it's like getting Lakers tickets for a game a month and a half from now. And you show up and LeBron decides that he's just not going to play that game. I think the NBA was going through this. Weren't they going through this struggle?
That was the example I brought up because that happened to me once. I forget which player. I want to say it was someone. Then we went to a Wizards game. They were, whatever team it was playing the Wizards, and we showed up.
Michael Jordan.
No, Michael Jordan was on the Wizards, and he actually said it was like one of his last seasons. I got to watch him play, and he said that the reason he refused to rest was because he knew that players were coming or people were coming, and it was the only time they were going to get to watch him play, and he wanted to make sure he put on a show for them. And so that actually worked out well in my favor. But no, someone else was resting, and they were the whole reason I drove there. And they didn't say it until like they came out to warm up, and he's just in a suit. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, we drove 4 hours to this game. But like, as an NBA player, or for you as a disc golfer or any professional athlete, like, there's just tournaments or games where you have to take time to rest. And especially like leading up the week before a major, especially a major at W.R. Jackson, like, I mean, honestly, I know points and stuff matter, but I think personally, if I were in your shoes, I'm going to W.R. Jackson the week before, because that course, I've played it multiple times. It's a course where you do want a ton of reps on, because there's so many different spots you can land and so many different ways you can attack holes that you really got to get a good feel for it. And like, it sucks timing wise, but I'm sure a lot of players are like, oh yeah, Tallahassee Open, I'll play it. And then they get closer and they're like, I really want to work on this part of my game. Or I really want to do whatever. Or I just want, you know, a few days to rest before the major, so I don't have to go, you know, play a tournament and straight into practice for a major. I want to kind of take some time and chill. I don't really think I don't think a penalty of any type is the right answer, because then it's going to discourage players from signing up for tournaments in the first place. Because if there's any type of tournament you're like, I don't know about, then you're just going to choose
50-50.
Yeah, you're going to choose not to sign up. Whereas I think the better solution,
there needs to be a deadline. There needs to be a deadline
of where you drop by this date.
Yeah, or if you don't, if you drop after that date, then you only get a portion of your money back. Is what they probably should do.
That would make sense, because then you're not penalized on a like point scale, like he was saying, but it still has some type of repercussion where you're discouraged to. But if you need to, you still can.
If it was a $250 entry fee, then, because here's the other thing. I mean, I don't think we have a problem with that right now, but I'm not even going to bring that up because I don't think that's a problem at all. But this is the only major. I didn't realize this. I just looked at the schedule. This is the only major that doesn't have an off week before.
Yeah.
All three other majors have off weeks before. So that is, you know, another part of my head too. And this is what some other players I've talked to also have this same kind of concept, is like, if there was ever a time to win, because at the end of the year, when you say like, I won a silver series, no one's really going to be like, yeah, but you won a silver series and X, Y, and Z weren't there.
Yeah.
If there was ever a time to go and win a silver series, it's the Tallahassee Open.
That's true.
Because no one's going to be there.
Yeah. That's a very valid point.
But it's like, do I want to, what would I rather have? Would I rather have a good finish at the first major of the year or a good finish at the Tallahassee Open? And I think that kind of is the question that boils down to whether or not I'm going to go.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, it's definitely an interesting situation, and probably one that we'll start to see more and more over the years, because I'm sure players will start picking and choosing their schedules a bit more, like we've talked about in the past. But, and part of it too is just a scheduling thing, because if you had a week off in between, if it went Tallahassee Open week, then the major, the Tallahassee Open is going to be very well attended because players are getting that week off anyways. It's just that it's the week right before. Same reason when USDGC, that week before USDGC, that's when we were thinking about running the Battle for Bedford. Just because timing-wise, it was the only time that it fit where players were on the East Coast. We were trying to snipe a few players for like a B tier. And I was like, but no one's showing up to that. because the same thing, like you, especially USDGC, you don't want to be playing a tournament and then be driving down, especially like 2 days, and then you're going. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. So we decided to go after the Pro Tour Championship. So then there's no more major tournaments after that, and it still kind of fits into the flow of the schedule. But it was the same type of idea where the week before a major is kind of like sacred ground, where you unless a player is super comfortable on the majors course, if they feel like they have a chance at winning a major and they're not super comfortable on it, I mean, most players are choosing the major. But, you know, it is a great point of where, like, for you, it might make more sense to try to go out and win or come very close to winning a silver series, because then at the end of the year, that can mean a ton points wise and getting into the finale, versus you take the week off and you come in 25th or 20th at a major. That doesn't do anything for getting towards a finale, I don't think.
Yeah, there's no points for the championship cup, Champions Cup. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting one.
The other thing to kind of think about too is just the wear and tear on the body.
Yeah.
I've gone Waco, Belton, Texas States, and then I'm doing Music City Open. So I'm doing four events in a row. And, you know, if I do Tallahassee, that'll be a fifth event in a row. Championship Cup will be six in a row. Jonesboro will be seven in a row. And Dynamic Disc Open will be eight in a row. So if there was ever, there was ever a time to take a week off, it's probably the Open at Tallahassee. So
yeah, it's unfortunate scheduling, but is what it is. All right, well, that's kind of the topics I have brought up. Silas, are there some good ones in the chat to bring up?
Good ones in the
chat. Well, I want to bring up. I want to bring one more thing up. I think I saw Silas tweet something, so maybe he can add to this story. But
perfect. People listening, really quick, be putting some topics in the chat so Silas has one to bring up after this.
Yeah, tag Foundation Podcast in the comment.
All right, let's hear it, Brody. What you got?
Has Drew Gibson lost his mind?
First off, can we just acknowledge how much of a stir that this one random tweet by me has caused for no reason?
Well, to be fair, I think there was already a lot of talk kind of building up to
Of the golf thing.
Outside, the golf thing has kind of, you know, Luke Humphreys bringing that up in the press conference. That has stirred some talk here and there.
Tell the people what you said, Hunter.
Go ahead. Inform the people.
Yeah, so my tweet is, I was brainstorming some video ideas for our main channel, and I came up with one. I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want anyone to steal it, because I think it's a really good idea. And I was trying to get community feedback on who would be the best person to choose for said video. And so I just said, have a video idea but need an answer first. Who do you think is the most athletic professional disc golfer? And as of right now, it has 151 replies, and then also several professional disc golfers are throwing themselves into the mix in the replies in multiple different ways. Drew has since deleted the tweet, but he basically put this long list of sports and skill games.
Sports.
I said sports and skill games because he had basketball.
Okay, you had skill.
Yeah, but then he had darts and cornhole and
He had some.
What else was even in there? Was bowling in there?
Yeah, I feel like
there's all kinds of ones.
Is when you say most athletic, what was your phrasing in your tweet?
Yeah, we need you to repeat that.
When I said most athletic, I said who do you think is the most athletic professional disc golfer?
Okay, so yeah, athletic. He picked a lot of sports that I would not think athletes are competing in. Like, there was a lot of sports on there where, yes, some people that are NASCAR drivers are.
Yeah, I forgot. He put they have dirt bike racing and race car driving.
There are some of, like, I know there probably are athletes that are doing those. But even baseball players will tell you, like, there are some baseball players that would probably say that they aren't very athletic. They have incredible hand-eye coordination, and again, it's this whole conversation of what does athletic mean, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're talking about athletic sports, there was a lot of sports on his list that you were just like, that would not have even crossed my mind. That's why my list, I threw in a couple of those as well, just to be funny. I don't think people actually got, some people got it, but yeah, it is one of those things where any sport you're in, whether it's golf, football, basketball, whatever sport you're in, people love the debate of talking about outside the sport. They love it.
Yeah.
They love talking about who the better golfer is, who the better runner is, who can jump higher. And it's, and it, I think it's just ingrained in us from childhood. Cause I mean, how many people had like competitions of like sitting in classrooms being like, who can shoot this paper ball into that trash basket over there?
Yeah.
Like that trash bin, like who could jump that, you know, could you touch, this was something that I think I want to say elementary school was huge, was like, if you could touch the door jam, like yeah. walking through the hallways, if you talk at the door, like that was big.
You're so, a cool dude. I couldn't do it.
I mean, middle school, all we did was see the bottom of the backboard, the backboard. Like at high school or middle school dances. Like we were those kids that were just over there seeing who could do it. So this has always been like something that's ingrained, I feel like. And it's a fun topic to discuss, and obviously it's out the best in some people. And I think if we go back like 10 years, 5 years, it's not even close, not even close. But I like my chances even with last knees.
Well, that's what I saw some people who must just not be super competitive, I guess. I don't know. That were just tweeting on their own accounts completely separate from the thread. Or also, I'm assuming this is why Drew deleted his thread, because like people were going on there and saying that he was like being like super cocky and egotistical and stuff like that. And other people were like, I don't know, like they're like, these disc golfers got, I saw someone tweet like, these disc golfers have such big heads, just throw the frisbee, that's all we care about. And I was like, the thing about like athletes in general is, if you're competitive, like
you're competitive in everything.
Yeah, like you're not gonna be like, think you're not gonna play disc golf and go out every weekend and be a top pro and not think I can win every weekend. That's not cocky. That's just being competitive. Like if half these pros didn't think they had a shot at winning, they're not showing up every weekend, because that's just what it is. Like that, that's being competitive. When Trevor and I are going at it, it's because both of us think we can win at whatever we're doing. And like, yeah, there's a fine line between being confident and being cocky. But when you're just having a fun discussion or fun argument of who's the better basketball player in the office, or who's the better professional disc golfer, that's like, who's the best athlete, you can say whatever you want in there. And like, I didn't once think any pro, like Andrew Preslin responded and said no one could beat him in a 100-meter dash in ping pong. Not once did it cross my mind, oh my gosh, this guy's so cocky. It's just like, yeah, like that's a competitive person. Like that's when Luke Humphreys says no one can beat him in golf. He's wrong, but you know, I respect it. You got to stand by it. That's just being competitive. That's how it works. Like there's some people that think just never had it.
What's the connection with ping pong and disc golfers? I've heard so many disc golfers say they're so good at ping pong.
Don't know. I think there's some type of tie to hand-eye coordination in disc golf. There's got to be. That's all I can think of. Because like ping pong is just a hand-eye coordination sport. You got to have a little footwork, but it's mainly hand-eye. Juggling, there's some disc golfers that juggle.
I want to know too, like, are we dealing with, do you think a lot of these people, are we dealing with like the American Idol situation of where they've just been around people that tell them that they're good at something and they just think they're good at something, but they've never put themselves in the fire to know whether or not they're good at something?
To a certain extent, yeah. Because like if you're in a bubble, like this was true for me with certain sports, to where I only played certain sports against like my own group of friends growing up. And so
I was in a small town, small school.
A great example was basketball in general. When I was really young in my first experience playing AAU, I showed up to an AAU practice, and I was already like exposed to a new level of basketball just with my local AAU team. Turns out we were filthy. We came in, lost in the semifinals at Nationals. So I was 12th man, respect. But once you get outside of like your little bubble, like you get outside of your school you're in, and then you go to like see other schools, or like for us, we roll up to a public school, and you start to see like how good other people are. For basketball, nothing really took me by surprise at how good other people were because I played AAU a few years. But some sports were like soccer or something like that, or ping pong, where I'd only played within my friend group. And then you show up and like I show up to college and other people come over to play ping pong. And I was beating up on all my friends. And then I meet someone who's like actually good at ping pong. And out of nowhere, I'm like, oh, crap, I'm actually not good at ping pong.
Well, so I think in the more obscure sports, it's easier for that to happen.
Yeah.
Of where
yeah.
you think you're actually good, when it's kind of like, you know, because it's very hard to get like a baseline of what good actually is.
Yeah.
Where basketball, you have to be very, what's the word? Where it's like you just block out everything you're seeing, because like if you're a high schooler and you're playing basketball, you know what good basketball looks like.
Yeah.
Like you see it on TV.
Yeah.
So you would have to be, what's the word when it's like, what's self-aware? The word when it's like,
not self-aware.
No, but it's like more for like a psychopath of where
psychotic
like they, yeah, I don't know if that's the right word, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what I'm trying to get at is like, you've watched what good basketball is and you're like, oh yeah, I can do that.
Yes. Like, yeah.
You're not able to connect what you're doing is vastly different.
You don't have a good awareness of your skill level or like capabilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there are some people that are very good at that, of where it's like they know what they're doing, and then they can see someone else and be like, wow, that person's doing something way better than I am. And then there's some people that are just like, no, I can do that. And you're just like, no, what? No, you can't. What the heck? So, I don't know if that's the issue, but hey, I'm all down for competition. I'm all down for a good little battle. And, you know, I feel like I have a good chance, because there's very few sports. Soccer would probably be towards the bottom of the barrel for me.
Yeah.
As far as sports that I'm confident in.
Yeah.
But I will take that challenge. Tennis, ping pong. We can do volleyball. Ultimate frisbee, that's not really fair. golf, it's not really fair. I mean, I like my chances. The more sports you add, I like my chances more. I definitely think there are probably people on tour that are probably specifically better in certain individual sports. Like, Presnell will probably smoke me in 100 meters.
Yeah. He said that very confidently. So I was like, I respect it. You're going to be fast.
I think he played soccer.
That makes sense.
So yeah, I think he's sneaky quick. So yeah, anything speed wise right now, like I said, I don't really like my chances. 10 years ago, I would probably speak differently, but in other sports, I think that I've always wanted to do something like this, because that was kind of something that whole line of a jack of all trades, but a master of none. That was a pretty good line for me, because I was pretty decent at a lot of different sports, but I just never stuck with one long enough to try to be really good at it. But so that's basically made it to where I can just show up on a tennis court and I can play tennis pretty decently. I can show up on a golf course, play golf pretty good. I've got a pretty good basketball shot. Yeah. So, and you guys have kind of, you've seen it more than probably a lot of people have.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously my friends,
it's been demoralizing,
but you know, we show up to these events and you probably think, oh, I'm going to be pretty in basketball. And then all of a sudden I'm just wet from three.
Yeah.
Dropping dots on you.
There's some sports where I show up and I'm like, you know what? I might have a chance against Brody and Trevor today. And then there's other sports where I show up and I'm like, I'm just here for dead weight. I'm just here to be the guy that loses. It just depends. We are, Trevor and I don't know if it's fully set up, but we're supposed to play doubles against the local tennis pro. for Foundation Nation later this week.
You and Trevor versus one pro, you think you have a better chance beating him because you're playing doubles?
We don't think we have a chance no matter what happens. We just kind of want to be on the receiving end of some fast serves, maybe take one to the hip or something. I don't know. We're going to start off just getting destroyed by him. And then after that, we'll put handicaps until it's a fair game. But yeah, I'm excited. Apparently, he serves like close to or over 100 miles an hour. I don't know what that means in tennis, if that's a crazy good or if that's average.
That's okay.
But
that's okay.
I just know standing on the other side of a ball flying 100 miles an hour at me is scary. So I'm excited.
Well, it's not going to be 100 by the time it gets to you, but yeah.
I just feel like I blink and it's there. I've never played baseball or anything like that. So something moving that fast at me is new. That's a new concept.
I was going to say, if you've never played like high level tennis, 100 mile an hour serve coming at you will be. Like,
I've never played low level tennis. I've never played any tennis.
You're going to be at the back of the fence.
Yeah, like, I'm going to be excited.
Are you serving out there, Brody?
I back in my heyday, I could get 115 plus.
Okay.
Yeah, like that's not terrifying.
I've got long levers.
Yeah,
I wanted to do. I can't do it anymore because I've had too many injuries. And I'm too old now. But I wanted to do this video concept that I felt like this back when I was like doing, you know, the viral trick shots and all that stuff. I thought this was a very viral idea. So if someone's listening and can do it, please, because I think it would be an awesome video to do. But I wanted to do a video where I basically did like whatever I thought was like the best feat in each sport. So when it came to like tennis, it was like serving over 100 and, you know, I'm trying to think if I ever got up to 120.
Is that like but the line of like, tennis?
Well, like I think like high tennis serves. Let's see. I feel like some guys, I could be wrong, but I feel like some guys are like high 100.
Two in the chat says 140.
140?
Yeah, I want to say like Isner's 157. Oh. Yeah.
I mean, is that killing you? So, like, am I about to die this weekend?
No.
When are they measuring?
So I want to say 120 is pro. What
is that like off the racket?
Off racket.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Off the racket. Okay, so yeah, I definitely was able to serve over 120. I didn't want to say something ridiculous and then everyone be like, "Oh, you're an idiot. The top tennis serves don't even serve that." But like, let's see what like Nadal serves. He doesn't actually serve that fast. On here, oh yeah, he's not even on here. Sam Groth served 163 miles an hour at the 2012 Boozin Open Challenge. What the? Oh, so these are just like individual serves. Like that, Federer served his fastest was 142 miles an hour at the 2010 Gary Weber Open. So yeah, I back in my heyday, I probably, if I was just trying to go for power, I probably could get one over 125. But going back, I want to do like a home run, a serve, slam dunk. Where are some other sports? I'm trying. Oh, golf, over 300 yard golf shot. Like run a mile in under 5 minutes.
Jeez. No, thank you.
Trying to think of what else there are other sports. What other sports am I losing? Oh, like hit the crossbar. Like soccer, there's not really one. So it'd be like, and I can't really hit a soccer ball that fast to where it'd be impressive. So it'd be like hit the crossbar from like midfield.
Yeah.
And obviously, that would take me a lot of time. But yeah, I want to do a video where like every single, like try to find like top things to do and eat. Like throw a football over, you know, 50 yards or whatever it may be. Football would be a tough one to actually do. So I don't think I could do anything really impressive in football. That would be a tough one.
That'd be a hard one.
But I thought that video idea would be
that's a good video idea.
To just do, maybe we should do like, what can we do? Maybe we should just do it anyways and just see what like the most impressive thing we could do.
Might be like serve 50 miles an hour, make a penalty in soccer, hit a 3-pointer.
Could you do like a layup through your legs? Can you do like a layup where it's like you go in between your legs?
I have enough hang time to do that. I can't get off the ground much, but I can stay in the air when I get up. That was the only thing I had going for me.
I feel like if I train for jumping again, I would never do this because I would risk too many problems. But yeah. I feel like if I did train for like a month, I could dunk again. There's this guy I'm tall enough to where I actually don't. I don't have to jump that high to dunk.
Yeah, there's a guy I saw on TikTok. He's 5'11", so he's like an inch taller than me. He's like 45 or 48 years old right now, and he's going all out training to dunk a basketball. I don't the video like started with him like grabbing rim. Like he could get up and grab rim now, and he's like doing plyometrics, doing like all kinds of jumping exercises. And like that's, you can follow his journey on TikTok. So I'm pretty invested. Because if he can do it, I mean, I might have to try it. I might have to send it.
Is he working with this other guy that's like ridiculously athletic?
I have no idea. No, this was just him training in his home.
Oh,
like
okay.
He's like jumping kitchen chairs and doing plyometrics on like some random foam thing in his kitchen. He was like trying to dunk on the basketball goal in his driveway.
Okay. Cause there's this guy that's on TikTok that I've seen a little bit where it's like knees over toes might be like, it's like his thing. That I think that's what got him popular, but he trains with this other dude that's like an older dude, definitely over 50. And they're just like slam dunking like it's Jeez. Nothing. I didn't know if that was the same guy or not.
No, this guy hasn't dunked yet. So I'm invested though. I want to see if he can do it. It'd be fascinating.
Open this up to the viewers because it, you know, obviously there's some people that are just like, shut up and throw the disc, right? But is that something that you would want to see? Because I will 100% set up some like tennis matches. I know we're going to do this golf match, but if there's other sports too that people would love to see people on tour go up against, I think in the off season we're always looking for something to do.
Yeah,
I think that would, you know. I don't think you want to do something too aggressive where someone could potentially get hurt.
No.
But, you know, table tennis, that's no one's getting hurt playing table tennis.
No, I mean, we can just do another ping pong live stream. Bring it back.
Yeah.
People want it. Speaking of bringing it back, well, Silas, you can start queuing up, get some chats ready. But we, you might have noticed we took a few weeks off of Foundation Nation. That's because we're making sure that we're putting enough effort in the videos to bring them to the level that we're happy with. We were kind of like stalling a little bit there for a second, just kind of making sure we got videos out. So we're queuing up a few videos so we can put a little more time and effort into them. And I think it's going to pay off. I think people are going to like what we have in store. Like I said, we got a local tennis pro for this week. We're going to try to break some world records for the next week and kind of go from there. Yeah. Yeah. It should be. Well, I mean, we don't have the official Guinness person. I can't spoil it. I can't spoil what we're trying. I think we'll be able to get at least one. It's not going to be official. We're not going to have Guinness Book of World Records here. But I think we'll be able to break at least one of my list of world records that I found. So it should be a good time.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. First question up. Oh, go ahead, Brody.
I was just saying, when you have the Guinness person there, it is stressful.
Well, yeah, we're not doing that.
Hey, I'll get a suit jacket and I'll be the
Guinness Silas person. Will be our Guinness person. We'll just print out a patch.
Yeah, you don't get limited tries for certain records.
Oh, really?
No. Yeah. One and done. It's not necessarily one and done. Sometimes it's two or three, but they have like certain records. Like certain records, there was unlimited amount of attempts that I had. Like there were some records that I've done where we were just there for 30 minutes or whatever until I got it. But records was like, you have two tries. If you don't get in these two tries, you have to wait however long and try it again.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
How many world records do you have?
I don't know how many I currently am holding because I think some of them did get broken. I don't know if they got broken officially or not officially.
How does that work? Do they like take away your paper or what?
No. I have the plaques, but I don't think you officially have them anymore. Someone else has. I think too, you can also like film yourself doing it. If you film yourself a certain way, you can send that in, and so you don't actually need someone with you there. And they'll basically like look at it and make sure it's legit, and they'll say yes or no. But I think I did two for one video. I did one for like an actual TV show, and then for another video, I think I did five.
Jeez.
So I think at a point in time, I've had eight, but I also think like three or four of those, like three of them, I think for sure were that the video that we did. Like they base, I was setting them. So
yeah, I gotcha. So you set the line.
They basically gave me a baseline. They gave me a baseline and said, if you do anything over this baseline, you will officially have the world record. So they still, you still had to do something, but it wasn't something like ridiculous, you know? Yeah. So count those if you want, but nice. I've got the plaques, baby. And I was in the book too. I think that was the coolest thing of everything was actually being in the book.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
All right, here we got first question up from Clinton Pippert. He says, should course designers be allowed to play in their own tournaments?
I saw this one. I saw this one be brought up because Greg Barsby's performance at Texas State. yeah, I think they should be able to. Because, I mean, realistically...
We don't have enough... Yeah, go ahead.
Once you play a course like enough times, like a course designer doesn't have a crazy advantage over a local pro, realistically. Like... They have a similar advantage of just knowing the course so well. Once you show up, you still have to execute all of the shots. Like knowing what shot to throw and throwing the shot, two completely different things. So I don't see a reason why it would ever really be banned because until... I don't think it'll ever be banned. It's just going to get to a point where like course designers aren't players. Like they're two different things.
I also think that Greg Barsby did not set that course up to suit his game.
That's a good point too. Yeah.
Like if I were to think like after playing that course, if I were to think, oh, what type of player would this course suit? Greg Barsby would not pop into my head as like one of the top people. So he just played really well. If you watched him actually play, he putted out of his mind and you know, he did not finish high because he designed the course. He finished high because he played well. And I agree with you. Disc golf's not at a point where we just have this incredible list of disc golf designers. If Barsby wasn't going to design that course, a lot of times too, you got to think the people that are designing the course, like Barsby lives in Tyler, Texas.
Yeah.
So he's probably the best person in that area to design a disc golf course. So unless you want to pay money for someone to come down and design a disc golf course, you're better off just having whoever the best is in the area to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, next one comes from Lou. He says, thoughts on the Disc Golf Pro Tour trying to standardize baskets for tour events. I'm sure players will love it. But how will the manufacturers react, and will it force more advertisement on players?
Yeah, I saw this. I believe this is all stemming. I saw it on a Reddit post where Paige Pierce apparently said in an interview. I actually have the quote handy. She said, the Disc Golf Pro Tour is in the process of making their own basket so that we won't go on end of a basket and then a disc draft basket and then a Prodigy basket. We're just going to have one standard basket for all Pro Tour events. It's just a matter of time when that's going to happen. It's coming. Only thing I didn't like about that statement is that the Disc Golf Pro Tour is in the process of making their own basket. I think they're just denying a revenue stream there where you could sell the rights to be the official basket of the Pro Tour for like a 5-year contract or something. And I mean, that would be worth who knows how much because everyone's going to want to put in the official basket of the Pro Tour. And so you could sell that to Prodigy, Innova, DGA, whoever. But I like the idea of there being a standard basket because, I mean, it's kind of a cool thing where like players have to think about what basket they're putting on here and there. But it's got to also be frustrating week in and week out to not have just standard equipment when it comes to baskets and tees because then, I don't know. Every other sport, it just makes sense. There's a reason every other sport has standard equipment. When it comes to like a basketball hoop and stuff like that, when it goes to a league or the basketball ball in the league. But I do think that it would have made more sense to have a manufacturer like pay to be the official basket versus what Paige said, the Pro Tour is in the process of making their own basket. But I'd like to hear Brody's take on it as a Pro Tour player. He might have a different perspective.
I do something wrong by my basket I'm playing on.
What?
Should I be changing my putt? Should I be changing my putt?
Based on the basket?
Yeah.
I mean, not really. No one really does it.
Is that what pros are complaining about? Is like,
yeah.
If I miss Because no one's trying to hit the chains high right. Okay. No one's aiming high right. So are they complaining that when they throw when they have a bad putt that goes high right, some baskets it goes in and some baskets it doesn't go in? Is that what they're complaining about?
It's more like the speed control when you do have like a dead center putt, or the angle control, because like if you putt a putt too soft dead center on an old Prodigy T1s, it might have changed now. I know they redesigned them. It would throw it right back at you. But that putt on a disc catcher is good every time. Or if you throw a putt with too much hyzer on the old Mach 3s or whatever, it's spinning straight through. But that putt's good on a Prodigy T1 every time. So like it kind of would depend on what you learn to putt on could affect how your putting success. It's not big enough that like it's costing you many strokes per round. But I do like the idea of it being standard, just so like you can practice on what you know what you're going to play on. So you can practice on that basket all season, all time, every time you're warming up, off season, all that stuff.
I'm all for anything the Disc Golf Pro Tour can do to standardize things, whether it's tee pads, baskets, fairway length, whatever, or fairway width rather. I'm all for that. And also I'm all for if they're able to bring more money in, because now they can sell, you know, the bat, because I think right now it's kind of just a bundle deal, right? So if Prodigy is the sponsor of the tournament, that we're using Prodigy baskets. If Discraft is a sponsor of the tournament, we're using Discraft baskets. So it's like everything's kind of bundled right now, where I think you're probably going to get more money as if you a la carte it. But if they're making their own baskets, I don't really know how that works. I guess you could sell the band, you know, you can sell,
I guess, the
space on the band.
I wonder if the reason is because they don't want to isolate manufacturers from sponsoring a tournament. Like if that's something where like Discraft won the official basket of the Pro Tour bid, and then Innova's like, okay, well then we're not going to be the title sponsor of Las Vegas because you're not going to put Discraft baskets at our event. If like that's what they're trying to avoid, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, could be.
It just seems weird making their own.
The issue is there is a disc golf basket company that all they do is disc golf baskets?
No.
Well, see, so that's a problem.
Yeah. Because,
that's the issue.
Yeah. DGA is the closest, but they make discs. So. I mean, it comes back to, it doesn't long term, it just isn't going to always make sense for manufacturers to be the main sponsor of these tournaments. That's just it doesn't make sense. But for right now it does. And I still think that you could have like Discraft be the official basket of the Pro Tour and everyone knows that. But then when you show up to the Innova event, there's no Discraft logos on the basket. There's no Innova logos on the basket either, but it's just like Pro Tour branded Discraft Chainstar. So like in the NBA, you don't.
I think they should sell the space.
But what I'm saying is like it doesn't need to be like Discraft branded basket. Like if it like in the NBA, yes, the ball says Spalding, but like you're not paying attention to that all the time. Or in the March Madness or NCAA, I'm pretty sure they just switched official balls or whatever. Someone just switched official balls, but it's like it's there, but it's not like a big influence or a big like talking point. I think the basket would be the same way. Like everyone knows what basket it is, but it doesn't have to be like a big Discraft brand on it for it being the Chainstar being the official basket of the Pro Tour. It can have just Pro Tour branding all over it. And the draw is like if you're putting in a course you want to eventually be on the Pro Tour, or like you're putting in a course that you want pros to practice on or whatever, the standard basket at the top level is Chainstars. So
what if that changes?
Well, yeah, I think it would be like a 5 or 10 year contract.
Gotcha.
I think that's what makes the most sense.
Yeah, so then people would just have to be replacing the baskets whenever that changes.
Well, no, the Pro Tour would, or even with these baskets,
come in and replace the
existing. Yeah, the Pro Tour is traveling with 18 baskets, gotcha, and they're coming up to your course and putting those 18 baskets in. As a course designer now, though, like if the Pro Tour makes their own baskets, unless they're selling those baskets where I can put them in, I can't have the official basket of the Pro Tour on my course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like the idea of that being a sellable feature where a company can pay to be the official basket sponsor. I think that makes more sense. Yeah, I think that makes a lot more sense. But regardless, I like the standardized basket in general. I just wish they were going about it a different way.
Yeah.
I agree with that, yeah.
All right, we got one from Britt Robertson, and they say, Paul is the last player ever who will win all majors in one season. Thoughts?
I mean, most likely, but you can never say last player ever.
How many did he win? Four? He won four?
Five. He won five that year.
Five? There's five majors?
Yeah, they snuck Australian Open, European Open, Worlds, USDGC, and Konopiste, maybe.
Japan?
I don't know. 2015. I can pull it up.
Dark horse. Never. Justin Bieber. But it's definitely going to be more impressive if someone does it now.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So it was, let me see here. Can I go by tier? What the heck?
Never okay. Say never.
USDGC, never. Aussie Open, Scandinavian Open, European Open, and Worlds. Scandinavian Open was the sneaky one.
Dark horse.
And you know what's crazy? He won more money winning the Scandinavian Open than Worlds or European Open that year. Jeez. Which are the two majors that are still going on.
What? Oh, that's wild.
He won the most for USDGC, $8,000 for USDGC, and then $7,500 for the Scandinavian Open.
Wild.
Yeah, fascinating.
They must have just dumped a bunch of money in there.
Yeah.
To try to get people to come.
Yeah, it was presented by Latitude 64, and Latitude 64 is in Sweden, so that would make sense. It was like their pride and joy. But yeah, so those are the five that he won in 2015. But yeah, you can never say anything in sports is impossible, but the deeper the field gets, the less and less likely it'll get.
If someone this year wins two majors, that's going to be very impressive.
Yeah.
Like that will be, I mean, they will... kind of regardless of what they do the rest of the season, they will probably be the player of the year.
Yeah, they should be.
Or like at least people would be talking about them being like one of the top people.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether they win like another event. Like,
yeah.
But the other question is like how much different is Champions Cup gonna be from Vegas?
What do you mean?
Well, I was gonna say Waco, but or I guess Texas State.
Are you saying a tournament with a full field?
Yeah. Well, like what?
It's just the pressure of a major right now is all that separates it.
Yeah, because the field's a lot. Yeah,
the field's the same. The amount of rounds are the same, and the courses aren't. The only one that like the course separates it is USDGC because all the other ones rotate. Yeah. Well, but European Open, the course separates it, but. We haven't been to European Open in a long time.
Well, also, you could argue, like, what if they just add more majors?
Well, hopefully they don't.
More likely.
No, less likely.
But with having all the Europeans over here now...
For someone to win all the majors, less likely if you add more. Right. Yeah, sorry. Silas was struggling with that one.
I was struggling.
No, you're good. I was just saying, what I could see happening is, you know, if the European tour takes off, right, and there's decent money over there and they can do their own thing over there,
yeah,
there are going to be people that are like, I don't want to go to the United States and travel around the United States for 4 or 5 months. I'm just going to go over for the couple majors. Then you could really start being like, because think about how big Texas States was because of those two players that, who was it? It was Vino
and Nicklaus.
And yeah, Nicklaus, those two guys coming over, like that made Texas States, for the people that know who they are, that made Texas States like, oh, wow, like this is the first time we get to see these guys compete. And was it Nicklaus the one that was like the European Open champion or something?
Yep.
Or
yeah, Nicklaus.
Something, yeah.
He's like 19 or 20, yes. I think.
Yeah, so that's where it's like, I could see that being like, oh, man. But I agree with you right now, like going into a Champions Cup, the only thing that I'm really thinking, because gone are the day, like obviously this Silver Series is going to be a little bit similar to like the Elite Series last year, where you have like, if you look at the field, it's very top heavy and then it kind of falls off a little bit.
Yeah.
But – some are, but the aren't like that at all. Like the bottom of the field, like you have some guys at the bottom of the field finishing the top 30, top 20. So, yeah, it'd be interesting too, because I hate judging stuff by rating.
Yeah,
right. It'd be interesting too to like have a way of like filtering or rankings on tournament field.
What world rankings?
That would be sick. No, just say PDGA, UDisc, whatever.
You dropped out during it.
I was saying right now, if you went to right now this tournament, Music City Open, yeah, right? And you want to see, oh, let's see how your filter rating.
You dropped out during all that. We can hear a word.
Oh, can I not? Like, I went on the website. Maybe that's how are we back?
You're back right now.
Okay, I can't apparently do anything on my computer. All right, what I'm saying is, when you go like right now, if you wanted to see how the field at Music City Open, what are you doing?
You're just looking at the rating. Essentially, that's it.
Yeah, you're filtering it, right? You're filtering and seeing who the top rated people there are.
Yeah,
I'm saying it'd be cool to filter it for world ranking, and whether you use your StatMando or whatever, you can filter it and be like, oh wow, this tournament has the number 1, 3, 5, 7. You can see it that way.
It'd be a cool stat for UDIS to just have, use their world rankings at these events and like have a strength of field stat.
Like, or even have your, that would be a sick thing for the Disc Golf Pro Tour to start putting up, is players' world rankings.
Yeah. You could see like I agree.
That'd be cool. Like if they have a clip from someone that you aren't really familiar with, throwing like the number 12 or number 18 or something like that next to their name.
Yeah.
Or if you want, I mean, if you're the Disc Golf Pro Tour, if you want, you can start putting where they are in your Disc Golf Pro Tour standings, because that probably matters to you more than
the world ranking.
You know, the UDisc world ranking. So you can, you know, throw, you know, the 4 next to Luke Humphreys or whoever.
Yeah.
And then you could be like, oh wow, this guy's up the top. So yeah. Thoughts about it. So
yeah. All right. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Do we have any other debates here, Silas? Are we
let's see what we got.
Let's get one or two more if we got them.
Is there anyone debating on they could beat me in tennis? I'm always down.
No one's debating that.
I'm always down. All right, Ricky did drop out of Music City Open. I know you guys were talking about that a little bit on Grip Locked, and I think Connor picked Ricky in case.
He was about. Yeah, actually, he might have. I think he did. He picked Ricky as his crutch.
I think he picked him just in case, but no, Ricky did drop out.
Yeah, he was talking like he was going to.
Going back to the whole basket manufacturer thing, what do you think about, Ty says, Discraft gets the basket so Innova can buy the T-pad. What do you think about?
Manufacturers aren't really making tee pads right now,
right?
Like the whole part.
What do you think about tee pads? Concrete.
What do you
world.
Think about the them selling the advertisement space though?
Well, I think that they've explored it a little bit more. Like they put that rug down for Johnsonville at the Tour Championship and stuff like that in front of the tee. I think there's definitely like something that can be going on with the tee pad sponsorship wise.
It's like just a sublimated tee pad.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's like some type of like grip tape type thing you could roll out on top. I mean, is that a genius idea,
dude?
Just get kids out there with chalk and make up stick.
No, but think about that. You could make sure that all the tee pads have the same texture. You just have like literal see-through grip tape, and it's got a logo on it.
Hey,
you roll it out on top.
That's a new company called Rip It Grip.
Dang it. That's my company. I thought someone came up with it. I was like, every good idea I come up with in this sport, someone's already done.
Grip tape on the tee pad.
I think that's genius.
I think that's genius.
Because you can like pick, we'd have to test out, you know, what level of grip tape.
What is grip tape?
Like
what,
skateboarding. Is this a made-up like skateboarding. Thing? Like you put grip tape on top of your skateboard.
Oh, he said no, that's already a company.
That is already a company. I knew it.
Man.
Darn it. It'd basically just be like the texture of.
Wait, do you want that much grip?
Well, you can adjust. So, like,
do you want that much grip on a?
there's different levels of grip tape. So like if you're doing like street tricks, you have a much like finer, less grippy grip tape, so your foot can slide off easier. But then if you're longboarding, you have like a really like they use glass shards a lot of times in grip tape, and you have like really thick ones, so your feet lock in and you can't slide. You wouldn't
like
want
sandpaper.
That. Yeah, you'd want the like fine sandpaper type where there's enough grip that it doesn't matter.
I feel
if
like that
wet.
Would just wreck your. I feel like that would wreck your shoes.
You'd have to play with it. You'd have to play with it. It's the same as like concrete texture.
Yeah.
No, concrete does. I think turf does the best as far as not wrecking your shoes.
That's fair.
That would be a great video. Why don't you guys do that? You and Trevor put on. Well, no. You would have to.
We have to have a lot of shoes.
This is what you do. No. This is what you do. Okay. You and Trevor put on brand new pair of shoes.
Yeah.
Okay. You throw 100 shots on concrete. Then you take those shoes off and put on another brand new pair of shoes and throw 100 shots on shoes and see.
Just see what they do.
Compare them. And Trevor throwing on concrete. Yeah, you can't do that because one of you might really dig
throw
in
weird,
more than the other. So
you got to have the same person throwing.
So you have to have the same person throwing. I mean, I guess you don't both have to do it. You could just have one of you guys do it. But that would be an interesting experiment.
Here's a comment. What about tennis court grip? Like the stuff they use on tennis courts.
I don't know what they use on tennis courts.
Well, it's like grippy.
What is that?
Grippy, right?
What tennis courts like summer like, clay, summer no, grass?
Like the hard courts? You're talking about the hard courts?
Yeah, aren't
like sport court?
Aren't those like tacky?
Like clay courts?
It definitely doesn't feel like concrete. It doesn't feel like just someone laid down some concrete. No. He's talking about like nice tennis courts. Like nice tennis courts.
What is that made of? What is that?
I don't know. But it's
like a material?
It's definitely not concrete.
It's not.
It's definitely not just like they didn't just lay down basic concrete. It's not like your
it's
sidewalk.
A lot smoother. Yeah.
They're typically made of concrete or asphalt. A hard court's often covered with an acrylic top.
Acrylic.
Which offers a little more cushion and smooths out the surface, offering a bounce far more even than is found on clay.
Huh.
Ooh. Do we put acrylic on top?
I think that's a
bit
too far.
You can have different colors. We have people playing, but we have people saying they don't have the funds to actually even lay down concrete.
Yeah,
because apparently making a tee pad is actually expensive. So
it can't
acting like we have money to put acrylic on top.
Let's just gold.
Maybe
plate.
You do it for one.
Yeah,
can we just gold plate our tee pads?
Gold. That'd be very slippery.
Limestone, just like the
diamond.
Yeah, now we're talking.
Is diamond more expensive than gold?
Surely.
Yeah.
Surely. It's gotta be. I don't know. I guess I can Google.
I think diamonds are only expensive when they're like if you had a 1 pound block of gold and then you had a pound of diamonds, but all the diamonds were really small. I don't think that I think the block of gold, the 1 pound block of gold would be more expensive. I think diamonds are only expensive when they're big.
All right. Apparently.
Yeah, like little diamonds aren't that expensive. Like you can get like little diamond earring and it's like not that expensive. I could be wrong here. I could be totally off.
This is fascinating. Okay. Well, when you Google it, the first thing that comes up is diamonds are much more expensive than gold. But then there's this question that says, why is a diamond more expensive than gold, but is less valuable than it? Which that I don't understand. I guess they're.
I could be way off, but I'm pretty sure like it's not. If
no,
you
you're,
have a
you're tiny, right.
Like if you have a tiny diamond, because like when I was buying engagement rings for Kelsey, like the price, let's just say I was looking at a diamond that was $10,000, right? If I was expensive, I want something cheaper. Can I have half the size? Half the size was not the price didn't go from $10,000 to $5,000. The price like drastically changed.
Well, a lot of it's the cut too, like the clarity of the diamond, the cut of the diamond.
Yeah, there's tons of factors. But
if
I would
it's made of plastic, it's just cubic zirconium. I mean, there's a lot that goes into a diamond. Cubic zirconium tee pads. That's
a big word. What?
Cubic zirconium tee pads. Fake
no,
diamonds.
No, marble. Marble. Sure.
Marble.
Marble. Ooh.
Just sandpaper down.
No, let's
down
do hickory.
Marble.
Let's go wood. Let's go like hickory. Like oh. old. Oh, no, let's go.
That would
let's
suck.
Go like
that would wait, be what's awful. The,
what are like the old school basketball gyms, like field houses?
Have you ever ran on like a lake deck when it's gotten wet and like the stain yeah. you just slip yeah. all over? Yeah, imagine that's playing disc terrible. Golf on that.
I went to I did a video at Butler's field house before they updated it. I will tell you right now, there are so many dead spots on some of those old courts. Yeah. You just be like dribbling it. You do dribbling the basketball and the ball just like goes halfway up and you're just like, what the heck?
I saw a fascinating video on TikTok of someone just like laid their ping pong paddle down and then dropped a ball on it to show the different
yes,
types of rubber.
I saw that.
And then one
you
of them
need
just
to get
sticks.
That third.
Yeah.
You get that third paddle.
The
what
third
is that
paddle literally just sticks. He just dropped it and it just didn't bounce at all. It just stuck.
So does that mean it's like if you hit a ping pong ball as hard as possible, it's like it barely comes off?
It probably barely comes off and has so much spin.
We need that paddle. That I saw the same exact video and
yeah, I was crazy.
I watched it like three times.
Yeah, I showed Liz it. I was like, this is so fascinating.
I loved it. That was definitely a video that I would show Kelsey and she would just like have no reaction.
Yep, that's what happened. I showed Liz and she was like, so what am I looking at? I was like, it's different things of a ping pong paddle. She's like,
yeah,
oh, okay.
No. Yeah, just, oh, okay, cool. Thanks for showing me that.
Yeah. Oh, nice. That was cool.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. All right. See you later.
All right. We got one more, Silas.
Do we? Come on.
Do we?
Come on, somebody. Somebody help me out in the
Bueller?
Chat.
You're saying that like you had a good one queued up. You're like, oh,
do we?
While we're waiting, have you guys decided on tournaments that you're going to be at? Like, when's the next one?
We've not decided yet. We were thinking about going to Champions Cup, and then we realized it's Easter weekend, and Trevor's family's coming in. I think Connor's going to be going down to Charlotte to be with his family. So that's a no-go. But we're going to try to do a companion stream for the MPO round on Easter Sunday.
Jonesboro is probably too far.
Yeah, we got to work through because we're still working out the Bogey Bro Battles schedule. And then we just
how far
figure
is
out
Idlewild? How far
it's
is
Idlewild? It's not far. It's like 6 hours, 7 hours.
That's all
right, here we go. From Sue, she says, since one-third of Elite Series events take place on a golf-type course, there should be an annual major played exclusively on a golf course.
Is that true? One-third?
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing.
LBC.
Sounds right.
Dynamic disc. You count that because...
50-50 because of Emporia.
Half the
yeah.
All right, we'll count it. I think OTB is still going to be on the same layout. I think Portland's the same layout. Preserve's an old golf course, but I wouldn't really consider
it. No, I wouldn't count that.
Okay. That's it. So you have four.
Four.
And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14,
okay,
15.
Okay, she says golf type course.
So if you count the preserve, it's exactly a third.
Oh.
If you count the preserve, it's exactly a third.
Yeah, golf type course.
I do like the idea of majors like mirroring what's on the tour, but I don't think golf courses are around for the long haul. So I wouldn't want to set up a major based around a golf course because then you're just going to have to change it a few years from now. Because I think golf courses are something that'll be phased off the tour.
Yeah, the thing I don't like about golf courses is because you're reliant on someone that eventually like can basically just say like we're not interested in doing business with you anymore.
Yeah. Well, also the fees of renting out a golf course, like there's so much more a tournament can do with that money
coming in. Yeah,
you're
reliant on you have to do something else.
I think the Vegas number was like $45,000 to rent it out or something like that. I think is what it said in the caddy book. But like, I mean,
yeah, would you rather, this is an interesting question. Would you rather that $45,000, like would pros rather that $45,000 go into the purse and then just have the tournament at sunset?
I mean, probably. I'd be surprised if it's no.
Because you could still have all the stuff that you still had, right? You could still have the parking, like all that stuff that wasn't part of the 45 grand. You're saying the 45 grand was literally just to rent out the course.
I think it was under an obscure line of, I forget what it's called, fan experience or something like that, but I heard it cited somewhere else, so that was renting the course.
Okay.
But I mean, it wouldn't, that number wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, if you add in all the other stuff too on top of that, then obviously no, but okay. Yeah. Well, all right. Good show, guys. Yeah, good show. This is gonna be a fun week, I think. You know, Silver Series, a little bit more laid back. It's gonna be interesting too, making the switch, because we've had we're gonna have like three events in a row that are 3 days, and interesting going to the Champion Cup where it is a 4 day event.
Yeah.
I do. You think there's going to be a cut at Champions Cup?
They said there.
How do we even know that? Like,
I thought they said there was. That information? But I don't know where I heard that. Don't quote me on that. I don't know. It should be on the PDGA. Or in like the caddy book, like, or something.
I just wish every event there was a cut, so there wasn't like a question of like, is there a cut? Is there not a cut?
Yeah.
Because that's an interesting disc golf thing of where it's like you don't even know. I have no idea. Like,
yeah.
I'm just assuming that Music City Open doesn't have a cut because I haven't heard that it does. Would I be shocked if I showed, hey, there's a cut after two rounds? I wouldn't, but but yeah. There you have it. Anything going on around the office that I need to be clued in on? Silas, you holding it down over there?
Yeah. Hunter's boss, my new boss, you know.
All business Brad.
All business Brad. He's been killing it in the warehouse. Yeah, so that's been good.
How close are we opening door?
Probably still a few weeks. We got the shelf was supposed to come in today. It didn't show up. I got to figure out what happened with that. And then I think next week is when we'll really, really get some progress done. So hopefully we'll have to work with you to figure out like if you're able to fly in for like a signing or something like that and work through all that and then get the promo stuff figured out. But I think we had originally said like mid-April, and I feel like we're probably on track for that, mid to late April. So a little less than a month.
I think we do the first week of May. I'll have an off week.
All right. I think that's a good target. First week of May. I think we can hit that.
Because if you do mid April, you're looking at Champions Cup followed by Jonesboro.
Yeah. Yeah. First week of May. That's a safe target too, because that gives us more time than we were originally planning.
Boom.
Yeah.
So first week of May is probably a safe bet to aim at. And then the warehouse, everything's been going great.
I'll talk to Bob Julio, see if we can whip up something special for the launch. So that way if you do, you know, come to the store, there'll be some goodies for you.
Something sneaky there, hopefully. Yeah. But yeah, I mean it been good. We've got some stuff obviously in the works behind the scenes that hopefully will be brought to light here soon, some different drops and stuff going on. So super exciting times. The Splice and the Mutant dropped today. I actually have the Mutant in my bag. If you're a Discmania thrower, I highly recommend checking it out. And we're also going to be dropping that Patreon video as soon as we're done here. So if you're interested in watching Silas's first tournament and Trevor and I deal with 30 plus mile an hour wins in all four seasons.
Heck yeah.
Also, Trevor has went through for next month's Patreon video. He already has it all planned out. He's going to be putting at least Connor and I, possibly also Silas, through Disc Golf Jeopardy. He's got the whole board planned out, everything. Oh, he said he's bringing in a suit jacket. He's ready to do the whole nine yards. So if you're interested in that, that's next month's Patreon video. So heads up on that as well, in addition to the Heiser Club mailbag and all the typical benefits you get. So next month's Patreon video, I think, will be just as good as this month's. But yeah, this month's dropping tonight as soon as we're done with this. There you have it.
Heck yeah. Sweet.
All right. That wraps it up.
And shout out to everyone too for picking up an Atlas bag.
Yeah.
Do we still have some of the other colors?
Yes, there's still Dune or Sahara. It's been referred to as both. I believe there's still some of those in stock. And then we have a shipment that should have some more colors and restocks coming hopefully around May. Obviously, shipping stuff's up in the air a little bit, but we should have some them coming in the next month or two.
Heck yeah. All right. Very cool.
There you have it. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next
week. Good show. Good show.
Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.